Hello, Clippers. It's me, your dude, William the Opinion Updike, doing a little solo pod today after this trade deadline madness. Charles can't join us. He's out of town. But wow, I am absolutely reeling from everything that just happened. More moves for the Clippers, some of which were very unexpected to me. A lot of movement all around the league. So we're going to get into that. I'm going to get into that definitely. I'm going to start things off, though. We are still playing a game tonight, free agency or not. So depending on what that lineup is going to look like, it's most likely going to be Shea, Patrick Beverley, Sendarius Thornwell at the small forward position, Gallo back and strong at the four, and Trez most likely will be our starting center. So I'll give you everything you need to know about that game, as well as dive into some key matchups and what we're going to need to do to win. And then we're moving on to Thirsty Thursdays, which is the segment that we do every single Thursday, where we talk about who and what we're thirsty for. A lot of that is going to be about this new look Clippers and just kind of talking about, you know, where this franchise is going, what I'd like to see more of, what I'm just so thirsty for. And then I got to wrap up with a general kind of recap of all the moves that the Clippers made today, as well as some stuff from around the league. So all that and more coming up right about now. Okay, so I'm going to get into this quickly so we have more time for free agency. Tonight, the Clippers are playing a game against the Pacers. The Pacers, in case you didn't know, are currently tied for third in the East, and they have the fifth best record right now in the league. Obviously, they lost Oladipo, which is going to be a huge blow for them. It seemed to not matter, though, the other night when they absolutely dumped on the Lakers. Doug McDermott is also out, who's like a key scorer, who's like a key kind of outside guy, a little bit of a shooter for them. So looking at this matchup on paper, the Pacers are 17th in offense and second in defense. The Clippers currently have the 11th ranked offense and the 21st ranked defense. So obviously their defense is probably going to be a problem for us. As I stated at the top of the show, our projected starting lineup tonight is going to be Shea Gilgeous running the point, Pat kind of as a shooting guard and trading off, I'm sure, Sendarius at the small forward position, Gallo at the power forward, and Trez holding down the five spot. This is practically a meatball lineup. If you don't know what the meatball lineup is, essentially anytime Gallo is in the center position, we call that a meatball lineup. And when Trez is at the five, Gallo is the bigger dude, so it's like a real fringe kind of meatball lineup if those guys kind of switch around. It's positionless basketball, baby. It's beautiful. So what do we need to do to win this game? So the Pacers don't allow a lot of free throw attempts per game. Getting the line against this team is both going to be hard, but I think it's going to be a key to victory. Luckily, Gallo is going to be back in the lineup, supposedly. You know, this very well could all change. But it's going to be really essential for him to get to the line, especially if he's having trouble finding his rhythm, finding his stroke, shooting. He's always been great at that. He's good at taking contact, good at finishing. So I think that does pose a great foil for their defense. That's like a little bit of a rift that we can look to exploit. Hopefully he doesn't look too rusty, and I hope that he doesn't have any hesitancy given his recent back spasms. You know, he's going to have to play downhill. He's going to have to charge into the lane. What else do we need to do to win? The biggest thing is going to be taking care of the ball. The Pacers are a solid defensive team. As I said, they're second in the league, the third in the league in steals. So we really have to, like, keep our heads down, stay focused, really can't get sloppy. It's going to be a little bit difficult, I think, to hold on to the ball effectively in this matchup. And let me tell you why. Right now, our lineup has gotten so young, and I think that is definitely more of a positive than a negative. More youth on the court is always going to be good. I'm also a fan of a team that develops their young core, and I think with every move that we've made at this trade deadline, we've made that a priority. And who knows, you know, maybe we might end up having to lose some of these young guys in favor of a big free agent if we do have to go ahead and make a trade for Anthony Davis. Other than that, I would see any big free agents coming, basically in service of this young core. I think that you see a young core, and especially if they're able to hold this team together and stay in a fringe playoff spot, maybe just narrowly miss the playoffs, or, I mean, heck, they could even make it. I think that that's a lot more appealing to free agents. But anyways, more free agent talk coming up later. Let's talk about what could go wrong in this Pacers game. Pacers are just a super even team, like front to back. So, even after losing Oladipo, seven players were in double digits in that blowout against the Lakers, which is, I think, their second worst loss in franchise history and the worst loss of LeBron's career. So the Pacers are still deadly. Make no mistake about it. So we got to be really careful not to let any person burn us. There's all these guys that can kind of get hot in their own way. And there's all these pieces that are, I mean, in a similar way to the Clippers, there's all these guys that are like really solid role players. And, you know, maybe with Oladipo out, the closest thing they have to an all-star is like Miles Turner or maybe Sabonis, who, you know, probably, I mean, aren't quite there yet. They haven't been all-stars. But, you know, it's one of those situations where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So I think it's just going to be really important, especially for the young guys, to just show what they can do defensively. If Sindarius, rather, sorry about that, is going to be in this starting lineup, you know, we already know that his offensive game is a little bit shaky. He's really going to have to provide a lot of value on the other end of the floor. I hope this isn't a situation where we're forcing Gallo to carry too heavy of a load very early in the game. And that could easily happen if we let, you know, any one player on this Pacers squad kind of burn us. And losing Tobias obviously is essentially like erasing 21 points and 8 boards off of our final tally every single night. So this first game without him, I expect there to be some growing pains. I do really expect it to be rough. Obviously, that starting lineup with Sindarius in the place of Tobias is you know, nowhere near equal from an offensive standpoint. But I think that hopefully he can provide some, like I said earlier, some really solid defense. Guys like Shea and Pat, who's been really hot lately, will get a little bit of a chance to step up. So that's what could go wrong. Let's look at some key matchups. The showdown of the night for me is honestly going to be Trez versus Sabonis. They're both two huge energy fives that are essentially like squashed down into fours bodies. And they're going to be battling out on the inside all night. I think they're going to be fighting for rebounds. Sabonis, you know, he has a little bit better of a shooting game than Trez does. But I think that Trez is going to box him out super hard. Trez is a little bit more stout, and he's got that crazy energy. I mean, which, you know, Sabonis does too. So they're both going to have their work cut out for him. I'm really excited to watch this matchup, maybe more than any other. I expect that Trez will also be on Miles Turner during periods of the game. I think that matchup's a little bit less exciting just because Sabonis and Trez are a little bit closer in play styles. So I think that, you know, they say styles make fights. So another key matchup is going to be small versus big. Obviously, we've lost some size recently. We did pick up Zubats after waving Gortat. However, we won't have Zubats tonight. So we've got essentially small ball centers that we're going to be working with. And they have some decent size. Like they have some big boys out there. So I'm hoping that we can kind of overwhelm them with like speed and movement. You know, the classic Corey Maggette, moving the ball from side to side is going to be very, very key in this game. We got to be shifty. We got to keep them on their toes. I think that Patrick Beverley could also have himself a night if he's like really able to distribute well, and if he's got the touch from three, that'd be very clutch as well. So bench first bench. As I said, the Pacers are just such an even keeled team, front to back. They're really, really solid. So and you know what they say about the Clippers now, like having a bunch of good guys but no true like star, is essentially what they've said about the Pacers since Paul George has been out. So you know, that just goes to say that they have weapons all the way through the bench. You know, we know about that. We know about bench play all day long. So I think that their bench will definitely have the advantage defensively, but it's going to be up to our bench, as it generally is, to really carve out a significant lead. I do think that's going to be very difficult, especially given, I think we only have 9 players tonight. So everybody's going to have kind of a heavy load to carry. So we'll just have to see what happens with that. That's all I got about for matchups. I think in terms of scores, let me see, what's my final prediction going to be for this one? I think that it's going to be 109-115 Clippers. I think that we're going to be able to pull this one out, but it's going to come down to the wire. And I could be wrong. You know, I think that things could also go very poorly for us. But you know what? With positive Chuck gone, I guess I got to stay positive. So, I'm hoping for a big win for the Clippers tonight. You know, once again, it's just one of those things that makes our young guys look good. So that's all for that. I'll be right back with our Thursday segment, which is Thirsty Thursdays. But first, guys, if you're listening and you have a smart speaker, you got to tell your smart speaker to play Locked On Clippers. It'll play it right away. It knows. You know. Make it easy. You know, you don't have to look it up. It'll just play it. You can listen to Locked On Clippers everywhere. Impress your friends. Impress your family. Impress your coworkers with how much you know about the Clippers. So, yeah, don't forget. Tell your smart speaker, play Locked On Clippers. All right, so moving into Thirsty Thursdays. I'm thirsty just overall for the new look Clippers. With the trades that we made, you know, we obviously made it a priority to keep our young talent and to maintain maximum flexibility. And I'm really excited to see what we can do with the pieces that we have. You know, obviously after this year, the only thing that's really going to be on the books is going to be young guys, you know, including Landry Shamet, who we got in that trade. And Gallo, of course, who's like our only vet on like a long-term contract. So I'm excited to see this whole thing. I'm really excited to see how these three guard lineups work with one of the younger guys at the small forward position. So maybe either Sindarius, who will be starting tonight, or Ty Wallace paired with Shea and Pat. So I am really excited for that. I'm really excited to see more minutes overall for Ty Wall, Jerome Robinson, as well as Sindarius Thornwell. And now that we don't have like so many power forwards, with Mike Scott gone, I expect to see some more Motley minutes as well. I think that a second unit of Motley and Harrell, it's been said that Zubats will most likely be our starting center. So a second unit with Motley and Harrell is interesting for some minutes. I don't know how much they'll play together. I hope that Jamichael Green isn't going to cut into Motley's minutes too much, to be perfectly honest with you. And just filling in those minutes that Gortat won't be available until we have Zubats. I'm excited to see, obviously, Motley get some more playing time. Other than that, you know, I guess I'd like to see more Meatball lineup now that we got the big Meatball back. Meatball lineup, in case you didn't know, I mentioned it earlier, is Gallo at the 5. So, you know, we've lost a couple power forwards for this game. Screw it. Let's see Gallo at the 5, maybe Motley at the 4, and then that 3-guard lineup. I'm really excited about this. I'm pretty excited just to watch our guys get some more time. And that goes into my last Thirsty Thursday thing, which I just got to say, I'm really thirsty for a longer or looser leash for Shea. We've talked about it on this podcast again and again, that anytime he's like making mistakes or having a tough night, it seems like Doc is just really, really fast to, you know, to toss him on the bench, to put him on the shelf. And he doesn't see a whole lot of playing time after that. And I think that, you know, the tough love approach is great. I think that it can be fine. I think that if you want to see any sort of like exponential growth of your rookie talent, especially at the guard position. They need to be playing big minutes. They need to get those reps in. They need to have the time and the space to make big mistakes. And if we do end up losing tonight against the Pacers, you know, I feel like I've said this again and again, but I'm fine with it so long as Shea is being left in there to figure it out. Obviously, we will have some scorers in tonight still, and Lou Will, and you know, the veteran presence of Patrick Beverley. But I want to see Shea's minutes take at least a 25% uptick, if not more. It's just so crucial. And I think that if you show free agents that you are developing this talent and you care about your players and you want to maximize their potential as well as build around what they're good at, there is no better way to send that message than by letting your young guys play and letting your young guys figure it out. And obviously, if it's super not working, go ahead, put some vets in. You know, you don't want to get embarrassed, but at the same time, you know, they're at such a crucial developmental phase. I feel like I'm like one of the California talk, read, sing things where you're supposed to like talk to your kids or whatever. But anyways, yeah, developing this youth is so important to me. So I'm just so thirsty for like a longer leash for these guys. I can't wait to see more Jerome minutes, more Ty minutes, more Sin minutes, a lot more, obviously a lot more Shea minutes, and you know, hopefully some more Motley minutes thrown in there as well. And I'm really, really thirsty for this pairing of Shea and Shamit. I think that it's a great match. Shamit is shooting 40% on his spot up threes, I think at like 4.5 or 5 attempts per game, which is so significant. He's gonna be able to boost Shea's assist numbers way up. I'm so thirsty for so much of this new look squad. So if there's one takeaway, I'm thirsty for this new look squad. I loved what we did at the trade deadline. I'm gonna dig into some more about the trade deadline, which ended today at noon our time, which is Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. A lot of big moves happening. I'm going to be covering mostly the Clippers stuff, but I might have some time to dig into some overall NBA trade deadline stuff as well. So all that coming up next. All right, so Clippers once again made some big moves today. After the meteoric rise of change yesterday, I didn't know how much more could happen. I was sitting on the edge of my seat all day yesterday, waking up to the Tobias Harris trade, just wondering what was going to come next. And you know, we stayed kind of quiet for the rest of the day after that. And then, you know, today I was kind of watching the deadline. I wasn't sure exactly how much we were going to do, to be perfectly honest. It seemed like the big moves had been made and the chips were kind of falling. I was very wrong. I couldn't have been more far off. So the Clippers made a few huge moves that are going to have, just lasting effects on the rest of the season. Basically, the poll from Twitter has been some people are fans. Some people, I think, are really disappointed that it seems like we're kind of punting on the season. So before I even get into these trade deadline stuff, I just want to unpack this a little bit. I don't think that it's... obviously there is some aspect of... I wouldn't call it tanking, but there is some aspect, and maybe you're giving up one of your best players to accept... Yeah, and like in doing so, you are accepting that your record is not going to be as good as it is right now. If you're a fringe, you know, we're still in the eighth spot, but if you're kind of on the cusp, I think that gets really scary. So first, I just want to address that I still think with the trades from yesterday and the trades given today that we still have one of the best shots out of any of the three teams hovering around that eighth space spot. Now, that could change depending on the buyout market and what the Lakers and Kings are willing to pick up. The Kings also made some solid moves today. So I think that could all change, but I think that it's a little unfair to say that we're punting on the season. I know that I have expressed that it is a move for us to, you know, maybe retain our lottery protected pick for the year. And I think, you know, I don't know. I would be very surprised if the front office was actually thinking about losing. You know, Steve Ballmer said he doesn't want to tank. I don't think that they're going to value necessarily keeping their pick if it's not that great of a deal. But overall, I mean, like, I think it's exciting as a fan, just the prospect of what could come next. You know, it's really enticing to think about what this draft class could bring if we're unable to make the playoffs. But that being said, I still do think it's a possibility. So let's dig into these trades. All right, the biggest one to me was obviously Avery Bradley is gone. Bye-bye, Avery. So he's had an up-and-down season all year long. He's gone from being kind of, we've gone from being kind of meh on him to absolutely loathing how much playing time he was getting from Doc despite his struggles, to being once again kind of, he's doing all right. So never was really swept away. I still feel as though that package was not exactly what was advertised. However, I mean, at this point, it seems pretty moot. So Avery Bradley was traded to the Memphis Grizzlies for Jamichael Green and Garrett Temple. Both of these are expiring contracts. So this is a nice move for cap space. It saves us a little bit of money. Not a lot. I think his guaranteed salary for next year was something like $2 or $3 million. So it's not like a big save or anything, but it's, you know, it's a decent, you know, if you're gunning for two max players, any bit of money is going to help you out. So let's dig into these players a little bit that are coming back for the Clippers, because they are both expected to play. I don't think any of these two are going to be waived, but things could change. So Jamichael Green is fully a power forward, averaging 10-6-1. He's playing roughly 22 minutes a game, shooting 39% from three this year on a little over two attempts per game. So if these numbers sound familiar, it's about what we were hoping to get out of Mike Scott. That didn't really happen. Could have been a slump, could have been fatigue, could have been, you know, maybe we were just expecting too much from him. But I actually think that this Jamichael Green play is going to be a little bit of an upgrade over Mike Scott. How significant of an upgrade remains to be seen, but I do feel a little bit more confident in the forward position off the bench, which, if you listen to the show, you know I've been kind of down on. I feel as though it's been pretty paper thin, especially when guys, you know, haven't been able to step up in big minutes. But I'm excited to see what Jamichael can bring to the squad if we do end up keeping him. And Garrett Temple is kind of interesting as well. Obviously an older player, old vet. I think he's about 32 years old. So his minutes are kind of split up currently for the Grizzlies. He spends the majority of his time at the shooting guard position at around 68%. And then he plays the other 31%, or 32% rather, of his minutes at the small forward position. So I actually like him as a three off the bench. He might work his way into the starting lineup. You know, Doc really does love his vets. So that will remain to be seen. It wouldn't be my preference, but we'll see. He is currently averaging 9-3-1, which is, you know, fine for a rotation player. I still don't think that's good enough for a starter. And he is currently dealing with a shoulder injury. He did not play on February 5th against the Timberwolves. So I am not 100% assured in what that timeline could be like. And once again, maybe with this injury, he does end up being waived. I have no idea. I would guess, though, that both of these players will play. So what do I like about this trade? I mean, A of all, the Avery Bradley saga is over. I like Avery Bradley just fine. I think that he is, you know, at best a rotation player, and for whatever reason, he was playing good starter minutes on our team. And, you know, maybe you could make the argument that our guards aren't as deep as we thought they were. You know, some of the rookies and sophomore players have kind of struggled. But I think that's bull, because he had the same amount of struggle and we were still trying with him. And Doc still seemed very stubborn on this. We can finally be rid of the unstatable conversation. Which it's unstatable how tired I am of that conversation. So bye-bye, Bradley. Really excited about more time for our younger guards, more development time. That's going to be just a continuing thing for the rest of the season. And I think that as fans, we have to accept the good and the bad. We're going to lose some games, you know? But I think that these guys definitely will fill a couple of voids that we lost from some trades. So overall, I think it's like a, I think it's a pretty good move, and you know, it maintains the front office's goal of keeping the books clean to sign, you know, some a couple maybe two max guys is a possibility. We'll see, and you know, save us a couple million dollars. And what do I not like about this trade? My only real concern with this trade is would be Garrett Temple taking minutes away from any developing rookie. So any rookie, and when I say rookie, I mean like our sophomores too. I mean the guys, you know, who did get, some of these guys even got significant playing time last season and haven't been afforded that opportunity this year. And I think that if we really want to get a litmus test of where these guys are, what they are, who they are, what they can do, what they will do, we got to play them more. That's just, you know, that's very basic, I feel like. So that's my only concern with that trade. Overall, I think it's pretty solid. Yeah, it doesn't like move the needle too positively in any direction, but I do think that it is more positive than negative. Gortat was waived. Obviously, our roster was more than full with players. So, yeah, bye-bye Gortat. This was also a very surprising move to me. I thought Milos was a for sure candidate to be waived. As of the time I'm recording this podcast, I don't believe he has been waived. I will keep an ear to the ground on that because I believe that will change. So another trade that happened very close to the deadline was Mr. Mike Muscala to the Lakers for Michael Beasley and Zubats. So yeah, it's pretty interesting how much we've been able to flip Tobias for, I guess, which I'll dig into a little bit more later. But Beasley is waived, or that's their intention. I don't know if he's been officially waived, but that's the intention. He's going to be waived. And essentially, this move for the Lakers is just to free up roster spots to most likely sign Melo. That could be incorrect, but I would be very surprised if you did not see Melo in purple and gold unless, you know, unless his career is truly over. I think that that would be the mark that that's probably the last time we've seen Melo suit up if he's not a Laker sometime during the buyout. So what do I like about this trade? Or let's dig into, I guess, a little bit more of the players first before I give this thing too much of a qualitative grade. So Zubats. Essentially, this ended up being Muscala for Zubats. So he's a true center. He's 7'1", 240 pounds. He's averaging 9'5-1". And only his third year in the league. So, and he also is doing that 9'5-1" in slightly less minutes than Gortat. Gortat was averaging this season 5'6-1". So you got a nice little upgrade in scoring there. And I think that even just with Marcin Gortat minutes, I would suspect to see maybe a 5 or 10% increase in those Zubats numbers. Also, I'm super psyched just to get to say Zubats all the time. Great name. So I like this trade. I think it was going to be essential. Obviously, after waving Gortat, there would have been a huge hole filled, obviously, with Boban gone, to have some sort of size at the five position. So I think this is a really smart move for that. Obviously, he's a young player, and we'll get to get a good look at him and see where it goes. It is the last year on his contract, so if we don't like what we see, he's gone. I think that we could keep him, I would guess, in the $3 to $4 million a year range. I don't see it being much more than that. He's currently getting paid 1.7 rookie scale contract. So we'll see what goes on there. So what do I like about this trade? We're back to having a traditional size center, who's young, as I said, definite upside. He averages over 3 defensive rebounds a game, which will continue to help us generate second chance looks. These are pretty close to Gortat's numbers, so it will remain to be seen if with those rebounds he can continue to grow his passing game. Obviously, Gortat is, you know, can be a fairly decent passer in the post, but you know, this guy is young. There's plenty of room for growth and development there, and the more play time he gets, obviously the more he'll improve with that. And what else do I like about this trade? We didn't get any players who wear wristwatches on their ankle. Sorry, Beasley. Not really a fan of the fashion statement. I'm not vibing. And We also managed to turn Tobias into two firsts, two seconds, a young second, or a young center, rather, a great young guard, and, you know, Wilson Chandler, who is out with a quad injury, so who knows what's going on with this. What don't I like about this trade? There's very little to me to not like. We get a free look at Zubats, whose contract is up at the end of the year, as I said. It just feels like the direction the team is headed in as of yesterday, which, as I said, may win less games, but, you know, prioritizes this player development. So overall, for the trade deadline, I've got to give the Clippers an A+. I'd really love to know what you guys thought. Obviously, we got a ton of cap room out of this. We, you know, I did not expect this flurry of trades to happen. Every move really seemed really solid. Love to know what you guys think. Feel free to shoot your questions and opinion to us at Locked On Clips on Twitter. And I will see you tomorrow, Friday, for Love, Marry, Kill, Pacific Division Power Rankings, all that and more. Thank you so much for listening, guys. I'm William, the Opinion Updike.